So, welcome to the Lizzian Events podcast. And today we have a lovely guest, somebody I've known for quite some time now, Heather Wood. How are you, Heather?
I'm very well, thank you, Ian.
Good. And thank you for joining us.
Oh, Heather, my pleasure.
And Heather, we'll not be talking about the V word, but we'll be talking about the way that people are coping with this situation. But before we go any further, I'd like the listener to have a little bit of understanding about yourself. You have been a senior social worker, you're a spiritual medium, hypnotherapist, and you know a lot about rapid pain elimination. So you're well able to help and advise. But if you were going to choose something at the moment of all of your skills, which one do you think it would be?
I think at the minute, the important thing is for people to be calm, to be self-aware. I think it's like a bit like a roller coaster at the minute. People are feeling quite upbeat and then they'll start to feel a bit overwhelmed. You get too much of the news, you get too much, dare I say, Facebook and social media, and it's heightening people's anxieties. And I think it's that the important thing is to keep calm and to keep measured and to have that self-care and perspective. It is tough times. It is a bit tricky. It's very tricky. But moving forward, it's going to be less so, and it's going to be important that we hold each other up and keep our spirits high, but also that kindness. I think it's that overall kindness that is the most important thing, that we're kind to each other and that we're kind to ourselves, because there's no point in being overly critical of ourselves, because that takes away from our ability to help other people.
I agree. Heather, we may well consider that we've got perhaps 8 weeks ahead of us, and at the moment we're probably 2 weeks into this. So there will be as you said earlier, there will be a moment when perhaps thoughts begin to slide, confidence starts to slip, may not be able to see too far ahead. Where would you guide somebody who was perhaps just starting to feel a little bit too anxious? You know, the silence of the roads when we sit there early in the morning, there's no cars driving back, and all of these things that we were normally used to are now not there anymore. It's just a silence. So if somebody begins to get just a touch despondent, is it time to put it into check immediately, Heather?
I think it's about having connections with the people around you and building yourself a support network. People that are fortunate enough to have family and friends that they can call on, and just to be able to say, hi, I'm feeling a little bit worried. I've said to people, and it's on my Facebook, you know, anybody feeling that way, please get in touch. You know, we can have a chat. And I'm sure that there's many other people that are all part of, you know, the fairs, etc., that are saying the same things, because we are a community, but that community isn't just the traders, the mediums, the therapists. You know, that community goes out to the people that come to our fairs and the people that use our services. And it's, you know, if people are feeling that they need to speak to somebody, then pick up a phone, send a message, you know, even if, because sometimes we don't want to worry our family and say, actually, I'm really struggling. Sometimes it is nicer to take that step away and speak to somebody else. But whichever, you know, I'm sure I don't just speak for myself, but for all the therapists and mediums that go to the fairs, that this would be something that, you know, we'd all be happy to do.
I'd never actually thought about that statement that you've just made. Don't want to worry the family. Of course, that's absolutely such a major factor to a lot of people's concerns, isn't it? So if you can reach out to a third party, somebody you may have met at a show or a fair, and we're not just talking about a well-being show, any connection that you've made, reach out, talk to people. And I suppose never has there been a better time to reach out to people who are intensely spiritual, people who often give advice and work on a very high level, mediumistic level, spiritual level. There's a really great amount of kindness and a great amount of benefit one can get from talking to somebody about the spiritual aspects of your life. I believe at the moment we've never got a better time than this to connect to our spiritual self, Heather.
I think you're right there, Ian, and I think there will be a lot of people that perhaps haven't even thought about being spiritual or that they had a spiritual side, that will now be thinking, because there's such a lot of it, the emphasis is more on spiritual things, being kind, you know, there's a lot of positive quotes. These are the things that people will be looking at and it'll be resonating with them. And they perhaps feel that they want to speak to somebody. They want to find out a little bit more. And that's not something perhaps that they're used to talking to their family about anyway. And I think also for women, perhaps more so than men, though you might be able to give the other perspective on this, I would say that for women that are caring for children, they're caring for the home, they're caring for elderly parents, perhaps there's grandchildren, that it's a bit like being the sandwich and they're squashed in between, you know, they're that really thin piece of ham in the sandwich, because there's just so many things that they're expected to do, and at some point they need to just sit down and think, but what about me? What do I need? What do I need for my well-being? What do I need for my spiritual well-being to keep me going through these next weeks?
Yeah, you see, fascinating thought. I've got two questions that lead on from that statement, but the first one that I've just noted down, that the spiritual idea of spiritual thought is that actually we're delving into the unknown. And whenever we have a spiritual moment, when we sit, think, relax, whether we're connected to guides or whatever we're doing in that area, or whether we've read a really interesting piece of work by somebody who is well looked to as a writer, you know, Vernon Howard, for example. I read recently his wonderful piece about the man on the beach who collects shells, and eventually the shells become his wealth, and then he starts to fight anybody who collects any other shells on the beach, not seeing that the whole beach was providing shells forever. What a absolutely wonderful story, well worth reading. But when we enter a spiritual quest, I think that you're delving into the unknown. My great friend Francis, who was a great mentor to me for many years, a very clever man, said to me once, the moment somebody on a spiritual level starts to tell you the how and the why and the when, then they have to go back to square one, because to be spiritual means you're searching and you're looking, and sometimes you only get the slightest of little signatures, the slightest of little messages. You know, like Joe Benjamin used to say when he was a medium on the platform, he used to say, you don't get any evidence, it's the evidence is in the message. And I think that's the powerful thing. So this spiritual searching that we have, and I know I spoke to you, I think it was at Newark, and we were just bordering on that conversation about what is spiritual. And then for some reason, I went and wandered off with my camera as I normally do. But isn't this moment so much like a spiritual quest? We're totally, absolutely in the unknown. It's almost Garden of Eden stuff, Heather.
It is. And if you think that everything is to do with what is inside of us, not what is outside of us, you know, it is that I am sort of moment where you have got to, it's a test for everybody, a test of how people see themselves, how they see others, how they see the world. It's about mortality and immortality in that sort of moment. I mean, I sincerely believe that we are spirits having a human experience, and that once, you know, once we finish, we go back, and that this body is sort of just one part of the...
I do. I agree with that 100%.
Yeah. But it's difficult to be able to say that to somebody whose partner's died, whose mother's died, you know, and that is the difficult part, I think, where people are looking at how you sort of marry those two things up.
I think it's, but Heather, hasn't that always been a real question over our work? Hasn't that always been the one that people, you know, spiritual people who have been severely tested when they lost somebody very close to them, when only perhaps a few weeks before they'd been talking to a great group of people and saying, you know, when you die, your spirit moves on, etc., etc. But then bereavement comes to them out of the blue, and all of their messages seems to slip away. I think that this spiritual concept, some of these ideas of life and death and reincarnation, all of these aspects, they can support you when things are going well. But when you're tested with them, when you really then enter into those ideas, when you enter into those thoughts, those concepts, as an actual experience, that's when your knowledge is tested, Heather.
I think so, yes. It's 4 years since my mother died. And she was ill. She'd been ill for a long time, but it was very quick. She went into hospital on a Thursday, and sadly she passed on the Saturday. That you have to separate, that there was the grief of losing her, but there was the knowledge that actually, because she'd been so ill, for her it would have been quite a release, quite a good thing.
Yeah, it is so difficult, isn't it, that moment? I mean, I can remember, I think it was two Lincolns ago on the latter Lincoln, we'd got one or two issues going along with a couple of community members, and they were really, there was some difficulty. And I would love to have turned round, and Lisbeth was categoric about this. During that show, her father was dying, and he died a couple of days afterwards, and she said nothing. And I, on the way home, I said to her, how do you feel? And she said, I have dug deep down into what I believe, and I know I've done what my father would have wanted me to do. Incredibly powerful statement, Heather. And she's never mentioned this since. I've just mentioned that to you, because we're into that moment, aren't we, about loss. Now, let's move on a little bit, because we can go a little bit upbeat. Well, not so upbeat. Let's go a bit downbeat, but let's move sideways. At this moment in time, there are a lot of people actually also on another voyage of discovery, aren't they? They may well have been married or living with partners for quite a number of years. And, you know, it's basically been a weekend affair where they've worked hard all during the week, and then they only see each other at weekends, and they might get into a routine of going shopping, having a drink, going out for a meal and all of this. And now it's all over, Heather. All of that aspect's over. So there's going to be somewhere on the line some tetchy moments, I believe.
Yes, I think, I mean, where I live, we're particularly fortunate. We've got a nice big garden, a shed, a greenhouse. There's lots of space, and I think that, you know, people need to remember that they do need to give each other space, and perhaps revisit some of their interests that they used to do before that they perhaps haven't had time to do. Reading, doing the garden, you know. I read somewhere that somebody had washed the cars and valeted the cars, but they're not going anywhere in them. But all these jobs, all these routines, it's important to keep going, to keep doing these daily sort of to hold it together, that routine. And perhaps it is a good time to get to know each other a bit better, to have some good conversations, whether it's about plans for the future or things that have happened in the past, or you know, what they want to do in a year, 5 years, because obviously we're not going to be in this situation forever, and people will be thinking about new career opportunities, you know, how they want to change their lives, perhaps simplifying things. But I do know there will be people that are not getting on and people that are really struggling. And in those situations, it is about keeping themselves safe, looking for support, perhaps speaking to people outside the family. And if things are really, really bad, about speaking to some of the professional organisations that are out there to support people with, you know, tensions in the home, domestic abuse, helplines, that sort of thing, if it is really getting to that stage.
Would you say that it would be important for people to set parameters, perhaps decide to work to a common purpose, maybe do the things that have needed to be done for a long time? So, I mean, I know it sounds mundane, but sort through the cupboards, get some backpack bags and sort through all the clothes that you no longer need in preparation to giving them to charity. You could really do an amazing amount of constructive work to make your lives work together and to give yourself purpose, because it's not going to be very constructive to sit and watch the television and watch the nonsense that's being put on TV at the moment in time. This constant repetition of fear is not conducive really to a very good relationship. I know Liz and I, we seriously have never had an argument in 16 years, not a one, but there was a moment last week where we were just slightly off kilter about making a choice about, oddly, something that went up onto Facebook. So parameters would be important, and working to constructive ends, I think, Heather.
I think so. I think the first week, the first 2 weeks of this, it was a bit like being on holiday. It was a bit like that gap between Christmas and New Year, wasn't it, where you can sit and watch TV, you can eat everything that's in the fridge. And I think now it is that time to start looking at where you want to be, what you want to do. Like you say, cleaning the cupboards out, going through things, not just the practical things, but sort of decluttering lives as a whole.
So take things as an opportunity. Don't look upon it as something that's going to set you back. Just look, take opportunities. Let's go a little bit further with this. I know that that you run courses and things, and they must have come to a hold or a standstill, Heather.
I've just recently this year started doing some courses locally to me, a beginner's tarot course and spiritual development. Unfortunately, that is on hold until things go back to normal, really, because that group wouldn't really work online. The spiritual development work that I do, I'm still doing some of that online, and obviously readings and guidance and hypnotherapy, actually, they all work really well. So they can transfer online, and that is something I'm quite happy to do.
Yeah, I'll put all the links to how to connect to Heather on the page with where this podcast is. If I'm interested, you know, I love hypnotherapy. Anything of that nature really interests me a great deal. Is there a short exercise you could perhaps give to somebody, you know, just a really fast exercise where they could meditate or close their mind down when they were just feeling that little bit of pressure? Is there? I'm sorry to put you on the spot on this, but it just came to mind. Is there something that you could suggest?
I think the most important thing, if you're starting to feel overwhelmed, is to just think about your breathing. Focus on your breathing. If you put your hand on your chest and close your eyes, obviously if it's safe to do so, but wherever you're sat, then just breathe in, counting to four. Hold it for 4 seconds or 3 seconds. And then just let it out again, counting to four. Do that sort of half a dozen times until you start to feel calmer. If you want to go further, you could imagine all the muscles relaxing in your body. You could start with your feet, relax your toes, relax your feet, your calf muscles, and move up through your body. You know, paying attention to those areas where you hold tension, like in your back, your lower back, that's quite a place where people hold tension, in the shoulders, in the neck, in the jaw. People hold a lot of tension in the jaw, and you quite often don't realise that you are actually doing that. People say they've got a stiff neck and stiff shoulders, but things like in your jaw, in your cheeks, those sorts of things. And just relax your body and just spend 5-10 minutes doing that, and then see how you feel. And you can either stay like that for 5 minutes, or you can just carry on with your day.
Or there is an alternative. You could actually read one or two of Heather's great works. Let me just quote something. And secondly, take a look at yourself. I'm sure you'll agree, none of us is perfect. None of us has all the answers. But what do I know? What I do know is that we all have a purpose, a reason for being here, a reason for just being. That's from a short article that Heather sent in to Liz and Events Nude. It's called The Birdhouse, and it's an absolutely beautiful piece of work. Bridget Ricks, very competent writer, and Gary Longdon, who is a poet laureate for Lichfield, organises poetry gatherings and has a great connection in the writing world. Both loved Heather's piece, The Birdhouse. How long had you had that terracotta pot for, Heather?
Well, it's been here longer than I've been here in this house. It was just hung on the trellis outside. I was going to say it's been there that long that the chain that was holding it had rusted through, and that was why it had fallen off the trellis.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. You've really got to look at the photographs to see the whole concept of it. How did the story? How did the article come to you? Is it in one great flow, or did you piece it together over a period of time, Heather?
It came to me relatively quickly. It was sort of one piece as I was sat in the greenhouse looking at it, and I sort of wrote it down quickly while it was in my head, and then I put it down, left it for a couple of days, and then went back, because it was what it meant to me, but then it was how I could relate that to other people, really. That is the bit that I had to come back to and put in afterwards.
Yeah, because in your article, So What to Do, that is the question, You also make people think quite deeply about their position, isn't it? And one of the paragraphs really sticks out, and it says, "We can all agree that on a global scale, we are a minuscule part of what's going on. However, to give into that thought is to, in effect, give away our own personal power even more than it has already been eroded already." Absolutely profound thought. It's very, very profound and very, very deep. Do you often have these deep associations with our relationship to the world? So if I interpret those words correctly, you are saying that we have to really understand the immense juxtaposition between our almost perceived insignificance to the great good and everything that surrounds us. And what I believe you're saying there is, don't allow yourself to get too concerned about the fact that you think you are insignificant, because you do have an influence and you are part of this world.
I do think that sometimes that feeling of helplessness, that feeling of being totally overwhelmed by things, is because people just think that they have got no say, that they've got nothing that they can contribute, and that if we say it's nothing to do with us, we can't help it, then we are giving that away, that power. But we're also, it's more than that, we're giving away our personal responsibility. And as each human being, we have to be responsible for what we do and what we say. If somebody goes out and robs a bank, we say they've done something wrong, whereas people will say, well, yeah, I went out in this current situation of when you're not supposed to go out, but my dog needed a walk. You know, that is, it's not on the same scale of seriousness. However, it's on the same level as that personal responsibility.
So are you saying that if we let ourselves down externally so that people can see us, you're actually perhaps doing more damage to your inner being, because the inner being knows, doesn't it? It knows if things are right or wrong. So if you don't demonstrate responsibility externally, then internally, because that's the microcosm and the macrocosm again, isn't it? It's the internal thoughts. So if you are making the wrong picture for other people to see, if people are observing you in the wrong way, then eventually it will affect your inner being and cause discord.
Definitely. It's that old saying, isn't it? When I was a kid, we did something, swearing was the best one, and my dad would say, stop swearing, and we would say, well, you say that word, and he would say, well, you do as I say, not as I do. It just makes me smile, because that is it so much these days. That is people, you know, that politicians, that so many people, this is what you should be doing. It's not what I do, but this is what I think you should be doing, you know.
Yeah. Now, can I just take you, move away just for a second, because I want to give the listener an indication of about just how perceptive you are. Because on the 16th of the 3rd, I put up an article that you had written. That must have been written at least a week prior to the time it was published, because it's generally about a 7-day period from somebody submitting a piece to actually going up onto Len. Now, this is quite a profound thing, because you may or may not remember what you wrote, which was a month ago. A month ago, you perceived this. You said, steer away from the minute by minute broadcasts doom merchants and tabloid sensationalism. Eat well, sleep well, and be kind to yourself and others. Build your spiritual resilience to the highest it can be, because we all face great challenges and dilemmas. Money for money will be an issue, and purse strings will need to be tightened to ensure essentials can be paid for. How easy to take a pill and carry on going to work? Caring for elderly relatives who rely on you, how easy or hard will it be to minimise the symptoms in order to pick up an essential prescription or supplies? If ever there was evidence of a profound visual of how things are going to turn out, my goodness, Heather, you hit the nail on the head when you must have wrote those words 5, perhaps 6 weeks ago. It's a testament to your thoughts about how things are going to turn out. Truly wonderful.
Oh, thank you. But I do think that the advice about being kind to ourselves and eating well and sleeping well, and that is, I think, the golden thread that will hold everybody as individuals and as families and as communities together until, you know, we start to come out of the other side, which hopefully won't be too long. I know it'll be, what do we think, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? I think so.
I think that's my gut feeling, because if I may make the comment from observation, I think that we've got a little bit of euphoria at the moment. It's the 8th, I think, isn't it? Let me just have a quick look. Yes, Wednesday the 8th of April. Let's put a date signature onto this conversation. I think there's going to be a little bit of downhill sliding for the next 2 to 3 weeks. And then there'll be a lot of questioning about what's actually happening. And then I think that because of the steps that everybody's taken, there's every possibility that we'll see a turnaround, and with sense and sensibility, I've got to say it, with sense and sensibility, I think people can begin to get back to some form of normality. Heather, do you think we will return to how we were, or do you think there will be tangible changes ahead? I'm not asking you to be too in-depth, but just a feeling from all of the great work that you do one-to-one with your spiritual readings and your mediumistic work. Do you think there'll be a shift in thoughts?
I think it'll fall into sort of two categories. I think there will be people who are not at all spiritual, who will just be desperate to get back to their old lives, come what may, and will want to forget everything that's happened as quickly as possible. I think the people that are spiritual, it will increase their understanding, their perception, that they'll want to develop that more. They will see that as being a bigger and more important part of their lives, because at the end of the day, that has been the only constant throughout this. You know, we've had personal freedom taken away, we've lost material things. So the actual spiritual part has been the constant that has run through. And I think that group, because we are probably a minority, but I think we are a minority that will be getting larger and larger over the coming weeks and months and going into the future. And the people that are more interested and want to learn more, and it's resonating with them, I think they will be, you know, wanting to find out more about what it's like and be looking for guidance and support.
Yes, I've always considered, well, certainly for the last 15 years, really strongly in the last 15 years, that connecting to a spiritual idea, to thinking about a tree or a bird or a flower growing, you know, these these parts of nature that just occur, they never stop. They doesn't matter what happens around their natural state, they continue. Human beings have a totally different way. They want to evolve and change and are always striving for things which are better. But all of a sudden, we've seen our total fragility. As hard as it seems, really, the reality is we're about 3 months strong, aren't we? If all of the supplies dried up within 3 months, we would have an absolutely chaotic and fighting world. You can't run away from that fact. And if we don't use what we're seeing now as evidence that we are now a totally integrated social beehive and we have to work together, then we don't hold much hope for another crisis. And of course, there is a jeopardy that we could have another crisis, because once you set a seed in a field of doubt, they'll grow at any time. There will be people for many, many years ahead for seeing somebody sneeze, and they'll be thinking back to this situation. But allow me to come back to this idea of spiritual thought. People like to talk about spiritual ideas and concepts, but I don't believe many people go back to what the core value is, which is nothingness. It's without thought, without possession, without contemplation of anything material, but just thinking, what is my place in this world? What am I to do? Now, for my point, for how I live my life, is it's very caustic. I know that I upset a lot of people, because you ask me a question and you will get the answer. And at 62 years of age, I've become the old codger in the back of the pub, and I don't mind if I lose friends, because I believe that I no longer have the time or the inclination to compensate or try and fit into somebody else's jigsaw. And my feeling is that the strength of how I live my life is actually to do with my deep spiritual values. The fact that I do not need anything materially. Okay, you can argue the point, say, well, you own your house, you've got an old truck and blah, blah, blah. But the real thing about it, Heather, is that I've learnt the lesson that you don't need anything. And the less that you need, the more you have. It's a most strangest paradox. It's a lesson where it says, on a spiritual level, settle your mind down to needing nothing but thoughts and kindness. And automatically, on a material level, slowly but surely, you need less and less. It's a wonderful thought, very deep.
Yeah, because you just lose interest in things, don't you?
You do.
Yeah, and I think when they say that with age comes wisdom, because I'm not that far behind you, and I think that wisdom is knowing that you don't have to worry and think about what other people think of you, and that is a big spiritual strength, I think, that not having to feel that you have to keep up with other people, you have to conform, that you can tread your own path, you can walk your walk and talk your talk, and if people like it and want to know more about it, that is fine. If it's not for them, then that's fine as well. But yeah, to be confident and secure in the knowledge that what you believe in and how you conduct yourself and live your life is the right way, I think that is the wisdom that they talk about.
Yeah, it is. It's all about following through, isn't it? Because I think, you know, some years ago I worked with somebody who was very, very wealthy man, but my God, he was an awkward sod. I mean, really awkward. If anybody worked for him, he treated them badly. He paid them the lowest possible wage that he could get away with, and he drove them as hard as a slave driver or the tom-tom drum guy in a slave ship. I mean, he really was the Dombey and Son in cat Stephen's song, you know, he really was a hard man. But you know something? Even though he wasn't liked, he had unbelievable respect and his business was prosperous because people just worked. You know, there was no point in arguing between themselves because he was the focal point of dislike. And I got to know him quite well. And I mean, know him on a personal level. And he suddenly turned into this unbelievable, fantastic guy. He was just friendly and generous. And he was just a brilliant man. You know, take him out of his work environment. And he was a lovely, kind man. But I was having a pint or two of beer with him one day. And I said, why are you so bloody hard to your staff? And he said, it's a trick that I was taught years ago when I was just poor. He said, I watched a guy and I worked for somebody who was just like me. He said, and I realised that he had played the best trick in the world on all of the staff because they hated him. And his way that he treated us actually bound us together and made us work so well. We never argued between ourselves. And I thought, goodness me, what a lesson that is. Victor, who's this guy I'm talking to, he said, I just follow the same pattern here and it works quite all right for me.
Wow.
What a fascinating thought.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wouldn't like to think that I was carrying that much dislike around with me.
But we're all each to our own. I mean, if you can cope with this, it's fine. And I mean, Victor employed about 90 people, so different to where we're at, really, isn't it? But it just goes to show. I mean, I was with somebody a couple of 3 weeks ago, seriously wealthy guy, such a generous man. And he was just quite the opposite, really. He was just a super, super fair man who just wanted things the right way. And in a conversation with him, a partner who he'd been worked with for quite some years, they fell out over pennies. And you could see he was gutted about this small amount of money. So, I mean, we're all different. There's nothing the same. Yeah. But you see, I think that when somebody says to me, oh, you know, you don't need money, well, I'm afraid in this society you do. You need to keep your head above water. I mean, in your article, you're quite in this first article that you wrote, So What Do You Do? There's a great balance of spiritual. You talk about angels, you talk about all things, but you're also saying, you know, you've got to make sure you take care of yourself. You've got to put yourself into a decent perspective, because I think that if you don't work on all four corners, material, intellectual, emotional, and spiritual, or creative, if you haven't got all of those flowing in you all the time, you can't become a quintessential fifth person where you're singing on all four corners of one's being. But I know you've read Never Let Anything Worry You, and I've got some really abrasive feedback because I put on it, you've never ever received a check from God. Nobody's ever received a check from God. Ooh. And the flack that I got over that statement by a lot of people was pretty deep. But if you read about the core value of it, it actually says, you know, you have to stand on your own two feet. You have to demonstrate that you're strong enough to make ends meet, if you like. And you don't have to be rich to do that, do you, Heather?
No. There's all the cliches, isn't there? You can't eat scenery. You can't live on fresh air. Cut your cloth according to your finances. It's just remembering. We don't need to live on a credit society. And that they reckon in America, don't they, that people can't survive from one paycheck to the next.
That's right.
And I think sadly there are people in this country that are in the same position. One thing that I always say to people when, you know, especially doing readings, giving guidance, and things are a little bit tough, and I say, have a little bit of a backup, have a little bit of a comfort fund. You need a little bit of a rainy day money, just put a little bit away, because you never know when you're going to need it. But if you've got it, you very rarely spend it, because it has changed your mentality, because you know you've got it there. You feel psychologically safe because you've got something, a cushion.
I agree so much. And you can do that, can't you, with your thoughts, can't you, as well? You can have a pot of gold in kind thoughts. You can have a pot of gold in emotional strength. You know Anne McGill, everybody knows Anne McGill. She was talking to Liz on the phone on Saturday and she said, you know, typical Anne, where everybody else is going off on one. She said, isn't it wonderful to be living in this one-off moment? And you're thinking, wow, what a statement. You know, it's just a brilliant thought, isn't it?
It is the time to sow seeds, to lay some really good foundations, because we won't have this time, well, hopefully we won't have this time again, where we will have so much thinking time, so much time to reflect, so much time to be able to look at how things are sort of panning out around us and work out how we feel about things, what our thoughts are. And I think in that respect, if you've spent that time laying some really good foundations, building connections, being kind, which is the thing that we all need to do more of, that will help us all move forward, because things are going to be rough in the sense of all this trauma that we've all been through. I mean, people that have lost people unexpectedly, people that are financially, there'll be a lot of businesses that sadly won't survive despite all the measures put in place. People just won't have the tenacity to keep going. All the money that's been pumped into the economy will all need paying back at some point in the future. We need to get ourselves mentally and emotionally and spiritually right now so that we can weather that over the next few years.
Yes, and I think that there is going to be some serious repercussions with people trying to blame politicians, governments, the press, the media for perhaps outcomes not being as they wanted to be. I believe that we will sadly, sadly come across a tragedy of people who will be found in their final sleep in houses where they've been neglected and they're lost. I believe that I mean, being a social worker and you've been working in that, you know that there are a lot of people who fly solo, live alone, have no connections and no conduits to the outside world, and we're going to see some tragedy. Absolute tragedy, and there's going to be a lot of people making a lot of questions when this crisis dissolves and is a memory of the past. I think that the blame, we must start thinking to ourselves, there can be no blame, we can only take on board what we can take on board. You know, it's like we keep hearing this thing about National Health Service, etc., etc. There's no need to keep harking on talking about the same old situation of not enough money this, not enough money that. It's a monster of a business, the National Health Service. There is no answers. Nobody can give a concrete way of running that properly. It's just massive. And we need to be not looking at what isn't right. We need to be looking at how can we make adjustments. And as you say, there are many people who are already spending grants in their minds, and all of a sudden they'll realise that they won't actually all get like 10,000 quid, etc., etc. And some of them won't be due for anything. I mean, the connotations of it all is such a complex. Cauldron of potential upset and fear. I think we need to be really going into ourselves now, Heather, and deeply thinking about how can we strengthen ourselves, and of course contemplating the word acceptance, I believe.
And it will be up to us, as because I think as sort of spiritual people, you know, call us what you like. I think that it would be up to us to maintain that positivity, that acceptance of how things are, but using that to build on it and build up the resilience, the emotional strength, the spiritual strength of everybody, and keeping people connected and moving forward.
Yes, I'm absolutely certain. Take all the seeds of happiness and put them into a garden of future.
Definitely.
And let's see how we go. So, Heather, will you join us again?
I definitely will, yes. Thank you. Great. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, I just knew we'd have such a great conversation, and I'm sure people will take great comfort and great thoughts and great meditations from listening to you today. Thank you for being with us, and thank you for your articles, and I'm hoping that we'll have far more to come. Thank you very much indeed, Heather Wood.
Thanks, Ian.